Sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Welcome to Counterpunch Radio. I am your program producer, Nathaniel St. Clair, and today's episode is brought to you in partnership with Verso Books. For over 50 years, Verso has been publishing important works of theory, history, philosophy, and criticism from a leftist perspective. Verso's catalog covers crucial debates on economics, climate change, war, colonialism, imperialism, and bravely details third rail issues like the occupation and genocide of Palestinians. You can support radical independent publishing by shopping Verso's catalog at versobooks.com. Counterpunch Radio listeners can take an additional 20% off by using discount code COUNTERPUNCH at checkout. All right, on today's episode, Eric Wallenberg and Joshua Frank have a riveting conversation with the one and only author of the classic book Unsafe at Any Speed and his new one, Let's Start the Revolution, Tools for Displacing the Corporate State and Building a Country that Works for the People. You know him, Ralph Nader. They talk about the election, how we arrived at this farcical moment, and where we go from here. But before we get to that, a quick note. We are in the final stretch of our annual fundraiser. We are so damn close to hitting our goal, and I know everyone on the Counterpunch team and all of you out there are ready to wrap this up. So if you can help us cross the finish line, I think we will all rejoice and celebrate together. And as always, we here at Counterpunch are incredibly grateful for your support. Okay, let's get to what you came here for. Eric and Joshua in conversation with Ralph Nader.
Sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give
Welcome to Counterpunch Radio. I'm Eric Wallenberg, joined by my co-host, Joshua Frank. The man needs no introduction, but we'll do it anyway. Ralph Nader is a longtime consumer advocate, presidential candidate, columnist, and author of the new book, Let's Start the Revolution, Tools for Displacing the Corporate State and Building a Country that Works for the People. Ralph, welcome to Counterpunch Radio.
Thank you very much.
Ralph, we know who won and lost in last week's election. Trump and his pals, including new ones like Elon Musk, came out on top. And despite workers propelling Trump to victory, the working class in this country is bound to suffer even further over the next 4 years. In your eyes, what happened? How could Harris lose to Trump in such dramatic fashion? And why was turnout so low in the blue wall states for Harris?
Well, the simple answer is that the Democrats and the candidate, Kamala Harris, got 10 million less votes than Biden got in 2020. And Trump held his votes at around 71 million. So how do you win an election when your opponent gets as many votes as he got in 2020, but you get 10 million less? So a huge number of voters stayed home. They didn't vote for the Greens. They didn't vote for Libertarian. They certainly didn't vote for Trump. So they stayed home. Why did they stay home? Because the Democratic Party has been rigorously ignoring the working class in the U.S., and they've been cozying up to Wall Street, to the military-industrial complex. They vote more money to the military budget than the generals asked for, joining arms with the Republican Party year after year, They don't really do much on Wall Street except for the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, but that's mostly consumer protection case by case. They don't get tough with these investors and all. They don't get tough with Wall Street with a strong Securities Exchange Commission or criminal prosecution by the Justice Department. So when you look at the scene, Kamala Harris campaigned with celebrities, which doesn't get you any votes, and wastes days and time, and further it gives you the impression you're associated with rich people. Second, she sidelines Bernie Sanders, who's the most popular elected politician in America, according to polls, and she cavorts with Liz Cheney and Dick Cheney, the family that was the progenitor for the criminal war of invasion in Iraq that killed over 1 million innocent Iraqis and tore apart a country that never threatened us. So day after day, we would try, by making calls and calls and emails to all various Democratic Party chair people, the DCCC in the House, the Democratic National Committee, Senator Blumenthal, Congressman Larson, Senator Ed Markey, Jimmy Waskin, and said, look, the way to win, if you want to really boil it down, is you answer the question, whose side are you on? And although you're going to continue the genocide in Palestine, for which you should be impeached and convicted, you know what the list is. It's minimum wage increase at least to $15 an hour from 7.25, which would elevate the wages of 25 million workers. That's a lot of voters. Increase the benefits of Social Security, frozen for over 50 years. That's 65 million elderly. That's a lot of voters. Raise taxes for the undertaxed, super wealthy, and giant corporations. That comes in 85% in the polls. That's a lot of conservative workers saying, yeah, it's about time they pay more taxes. They've gotten away with it year after year. Those three were pushed by Bernie Sanders. He went all over the country, dutifully supporting the Harris campaign, and saying, but you have to add to your daily message the minimum wage. You have to add the increasing taxes on the wealthy. You have to add Social Security benefits. Of course, he had a lot more, but he was just that's the way you get people to say, well, you know, this party is for me. But you can't just have throwaway lines. And all Kamala Harris did, she had a throwaway line on minimum wage, and only 3 weeks before the election, she put a dollar figure on it, $15. Ridiculous. Social Security benefit increase was supported by 200 Democrats in the House in 2023. And she never mentioned that. She said, protect Social Security, which means just hold on to the existing level that's been frozen for over 50 years. At the same time, she has her brother-in-law go to Wall Street with another guy to get advice from Wall Street and corporate law firms and Goldman Sachs on her economic and tax policy. Are you kidding? I mean, that's why even when she said the right things as a throwaway line, nobody believed her. It wasn't authentic. And the other thing is the Democratic Party has abandoned half the country year after year, the red states. That's not a good way to win. They lost the gerrymandering contest in 2010 for the following decade. They bungled in New York when they had a Democratic majority with lost 5 seats in the House. They contract out their campaigns to the worst corporate conflicted consultants who have corporate clients month after month, and they sign on to advise the Democrats and control the campaign and to block any access by progressive groups like ours from having any input. So that's why we organized in 2022 something called winningamerica.net with a Zoom call with any candidates who wanted to come on with their staff at the congressional or state level. And we had 24 civic leaders, each one on a very important issue, a tax issue, Social Security issue, child protection issue, et cetera. And they basically delivered the strategy, tactics, policies, language, rebuttals, slogans, everything, ready-made, and they didn't listen. Nancy Pelosi would not encourage people to be on the Zoom call, even though we did get endorsements by Ed Markey, Hakeem Jeffries, Jim McGovern, and Jamie Raskin. They didn't have the power that Pelosi had. Pelosi has devastated the Democratic Party. When Biden said she's the greatest speaker in history, really? Let's see. She lost 2010, the House, 2012, 2014, 2016, to the worst Republican Party in history, overtly against women, children, environment, climate, tax reform, living wages, adequate universal health insurance, you name it. Take over the public lands, corporate crime, ignoring corporate crime, and she couldn't win, and she lost. So that's the summary of how the Democratic Party, abandoning half the country, that's a pretty serious handicap to start elections with, and taking money from corporate interests, even more from Wall Street than the Republicans get, dialing for the same dollars, letting corporate consultants control the campaign, and sidelining all the great New Deal issues that kept winning election after election for Franklin Delano Roosevelt, Harry Truman, etc.
Ralph, as you've noted, this Democratic Party is in total collapse. Your latest article, Electing an American Fuhrer as Wall Street Cheers and Soars, makes the case that we're headed for dictatorial fascist rule. And I think of Amy Caesar's insights on the rise of fascism in Europe as the imperial boomerang. So the violence of militarism, colonialism, occupation, the brutality of state repression and spying and coercion being unleashed at home on the population of the imperial power. And it seems that we're maybe reaping the harvest of empire here. And I think in particular, the past 13 months of US-backed and funded genocide on the people of Palestine, and now Lebanon, likely elsewhere in the Middle East, US bombs dropping by Israel. And I'm just wondering, can you say more about how the obliteration of Gaza and now the bombing of Lebanon fits into this election and why you think it's come, you know, what you think is to come for all of us in the next 4 years, and I'm sure likely beyond that?
Well, it's just the same old problem with the Democratic Party. They don't learn from past mistakes. Kamala Harris basically ran a campaign that Hillary Clinton ran. It's the same thing. She focused on Trump. You know, people know what Trump is. They've made up their mind if they don't mind his lying, or if they do mind his lying and his narcissism and his bigotry and his misogyny, his corruption, etc. Instead of focusing on what Trump did in 4 years as a figurehead for empire, for Wall Street, for all the worst plutocratic and oligarchic forces in the country, of which he's won, along with his family, to enrich. So here we have the Palestine situation. It wasn't just Muslim Americans, Arab Americans who turned off. It was a lot of people watching the slaughter day after day with U.S. weapons, billions of dollars whooshed through Congress without public hearings by Republicans and Democrats, standing ovations for a former leader, more than any president got in a joint session of Congress. And everybody in the Democratic Party getting up in the morning and saying, Israel has a right to defend itself, give them billions, give them the veto united for the Security Council. And so more and more people start saying, hey, what about us? You got 62 million poor whites in the country. What about us? What about our needs? What is this Israel, Israel, Netanyahu, Netanyahu snaps his fingers and all these politicians click their heels on Capitol Hill and in the White House and State Department? That's why I call them Bibi Biden and Bibi Blinken. This country has got no sense of dignity and leadership and morality and rule of international law. Instead, it's Biden is violating six federal statutes conditioning weapon shipments to foreign countries that are being violated by Israel. And so they should have said, sorry, no weapons. You've been violating federal law. Bye-bye. And no more veto at the Security Council for this kind of chronic law violator represented by Netanyahu. No. Instead, they forgot about Middle America. And of course, the working classes will never forgive the Democrats and Clinton for NAFTA, the shipment of whole U.S. industries to fascist and communist dictatorships abroad, and hollowing out communities and lecturing these former steel workers, auto parts workers, textile workers, furniture building workers. Oh, don't you understand? Free trade is a win-win proposition. And you just better understand that. It's good for you. It's good for you. Just keep quiet. Well, Trump comes along and lifts this simmering, explosive, suppressed rage. He lifts it up. And day after day, he's massaging it, encouraging it, infuriating it. And it's a wonder the Democrats didn't lose by even a larger margin. Because when push comes to shove, people will vote their interests where they live, work, and raise their families. And Trump is a great fearmonger about immigration, and he kept lying about it. And the Democrats kept saying, oh, tisk, tisk, he undermined the bill in Congress that would have fixed the problem. Boy, that really resonates in a vivid fashion. Instead of saying, look, this guy's lying. The asylum seekers have declined, and he's bashing immigrants. And there are millions of Americans who trust immigrants to take care of their little kids and their elderly infirm and to harvest their crops and serve their food and clean up after them, all jobs that most Americans don't want. And do you really want to bash these immigrants in a country that is entirely from immigrants other than Native Americans? They don't even know how to answer it. And they don't even know how to boast on the child tax extension. They sort of tore the Republicans apart on that. Not another throwaway line. If 61 million kids were getting $300 or so a month, that's a lot of conservative family kids as well as liberal family kids, and the Republicans blocked it, and they didn't make them pay for it. They didn't make them pay for it in terms of elections. So the problem is the Democratic Party never looks itself in the mirror, loves to scapegoat the Greens. They lost so big this year they couldn't even scapegoat the Greens. And they never fire anybody. Like, have you heard a wave of resignations from the Democratic Party apparatus after this collapse on November 5th? No. They keep the same people or recycle people who are just like the same people. And then when they want to take a break, they go and join these corporate consulting firms to make a bundle of money, or they have startups that become attached to these large corporate consulting firms, a merry-go-round that the mainstream press refused to cover in this year's campaign. They didn't cover the consultants. Constantly, I would show why it's important to cover the consultants, how to cover the consultants. I would talk to dozens of reporters, some editors, and they just couldn't be bothered. They wanted to talk about what kind of coach Tim Walz was, or what's the relation between Kamala Harris and her mother, scientist over the years, all that sort of thing. Plus, you know, who's ahead, the horse race, who's ahead, who's raised more money, instead of what's the money being spent for? Analyze the ads. Why are the ads so bad? Why don't they have more money in the ground game to get out the vote in the neighborhoods? Why are the ads so bad? Because the consultants get 15% commission. Therefore, they're going to steer hundreds of millions of dollars into insipid, vacuous, and actually irritatingly boomeranging ads, hour after hour, on television and social media. We've seen them all, and they actually have a negative effect against the Democrats. And there it is. They still keep pumping more because they contract out our election campaign to corporations. I mean, whoever would dream that that would be the case? And that is what is the case. And it isn't newsworthy enough for the New York Times or Washington Post or AP or the Wall Street Journal.
Ralph, news is coming out about who Trump is picking for these top agencies and posts. As expected, it looks like a frontal assault on the regulatory state. Lee Zeldin, who despises climate rules, might head the EPA. Michael Waltz, China hawk for National Security Advisor. Marco Rubio for Secretary of State. Tom Homan, who can't wait to deport entire families to handle immigration. The dreadful list goes on. We obviously can't count on the Democrats to put up any real opposition to this. And I'm curious how you think we should be preparing to deal with some of the fallout from the Trump election and what's ahead for us.
Well, this is the worst political situation in American history. What we're seeing here is American fascism equipped with money, equipped with their own media, like Elon Musk's Twitter or X and many others, equipped with very determined, savage appointees and nominees who are not going to learn on the job because they were in the first administration or they've been practicing and getting ready, apropos the Heritage Foundation's Project 2025, down to the actual statutes and strategies. They are above the law, and for the first time in American history, there is no structure in the separation of powers and checks and balances to stop them. They control the House, they control the Senate, they control the Supreme Court and the judiciary. So you have two other branches. There's no checkmate, not even a bump in the road. You have a Supreme Court that said in June that a president is immune from criminal prosecution for official conduct, widely defined, I might add. And of course, Trump has already said in July 2019, with Article 2, I can do whatever I want as president. Actually, he did it. He violated more laws openly, blatantly, sneeringly, as well as violated the Constitution and gave the flick of the finger to over 125 congressional subpoenas, which itself is an impeachable offense, by the way. So you have a lawless regime bent on revenge, bent on making sure the country's not ready for pandemics, bent not ready for climate violence, increasing greenhouse gases by giving the drill, baby, drill policy to the oil, gas, and coal industries. They're going to further reduce taxes on the super wealthy and the corporations. They're anti-union. They are certainly anti-consumer. They're full of hate for refugees and even creation of our own empire. There's no chance that anybody from Lebanon or Palestine is going to come in under asylum, for example. And they're going to deregulate the agencies and turn them into weapons against the consumers and workers and small investors and small taxpayers, not simply neuter them. They're going to actually turn them into weapons. They're going to confront protesters and label them as terrorists and prosecute them. And the resistance, which will be in the streets, will be fodder for Trump. That's exactly what he wants. they can provoke a few broken windows and this and that, and then the crackdown begins and the response begins, and that's the way fascism moves into terror. And that's what we're going to see here. Not just fascism, we're going to see terror, because there's no checkpoint. The only resistance is the remobilization of people. And the only handle to slow Trump down has got to be Congress. And I wrote this up in the forthcoming issue, The Capitol Citizen, which Counterpunch's wonderful bookstore has as part of its offerings. And what I basically said was, look, regardless of who controls Congress, the only way to get underway is to start trying to control Congress from the public, because Congress is the most powerful branch of government. It's the branch that creates and orients the other two branches. It has the exclusive power to tax, to spend, to subpoena for investigative purposes, to confirm nominees, and to declare war or not declare, or to prohibit the war by not declaring it. And there are 535 people, senators, representatives. We have about 20% of them on our side on most of these issues. 20% is a good start. And we got to organize at the base, where we develop a formal summons with clear-eyed petitions to have the members come back to town meetings and face the people with no flacks, no intermediaries, no voicemails, no incommunicado techniques. And that can be done in 500 clear petition names. We'll get a congressperson, and 1,000 or so will get a senator back, especially since the numbers between Republicans and Democrats are very close in the House, in the Senate. That's the only thing I see, other than a few dissidents in the House and Senate playing Joe Manchin. So if a few spin off from Mike Johnson's speakership on some issues, that can tip the number on a particular vote to the Democrats, and the same for the Republican-controlled Senate. Do I see any energy out there? Yeah, I see some, but I see much more disillusionment, depression, withdrawal, cynicism, shock, horror. There's far more of that. And so the young generation's got to put down their cell phone, get rid of the internet gulag that controls them like a Houdini, and start mobilizing, because it's their country and it's their future. And we always have to remember, it doesn't take more than 1% of organized people in each congressional district. That's 2.5 million people organizing their Congress watchdog group, reflecting public opinion. And there's a lot of left-right support, as you all know, for a lot of these social safety net issues and a lot of these justice issues, as I mentioned earlier. And open up an office and use the summons to bring these members back, and hope that Trump will not have more than 2 years without congressional opposition. That's what I see. And Trump may not last 2 years. He has refused to release his medical records. He's refused to release his medical history in 2016, 20, and 24, telling the reporters who inquire, yes, I'm going to release them. I'm going to release them August, September. I'm going to release them October. And then he never releases them. Well, why doesn't he release them? Because there may be some serious neurological, carcinogenic, cardiovascular, or other problems. That's why the people on November 5th might have elected two presidents, President Trump and President Vance. So we got to keep the heat up. The Democrats never made a big issue of the medical histories at all. They gave him a free ride, as they did on so many other things that he's gotten away with. The indictments are all going to be falling away. Georgia is not going to come up in time. Florida has already been dismissed. And even if it's reinstated, you've got the White House covered by the Supreme Court decision that a sitting president cannot be criminally prosecuted. And the same for Jack Smith and the January 6th insurrection. That's going. The only thing left is a state judge in New York who has a deferred date of sentencing Donald Trump for being convicted of 35 or so felonies in a state court. And that sentencing is still scheduled for November 24th, I believe, but it may be postponed indefinitely. And that's the last legal action left that Donald J. Trump has not obliterated. The greatest breakaway fugitive from justice as a business person and as a politician in American history.
Yeah, it's very unbelievable. Ralph, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today and for all of your work over the years. And we'll be continue to publish your great columns in the years ahead. And your voice is such an important one. Thank you so much for joining us.
And thank your listeners for reading The Capital Citizen. Go to capitalcitizen.com. The reviews are beyond rave level for this print newspaper covering Capitol Hill and unofficial journalism and empowering you, the reader, to become a Capitol citizen, riding herd on those 535 men and women who possess your massive delegated power under the Constitution of We the People, and so often abuse it on behalf of giant corporations.
Do you want to repeat the website one more time for people?
Yes, capitalcitizen.com. You give a $5 donation or more, you'll get it immediately by first-class mail.
Great. It's a great newspaper. Pages. It's a great newspaper and an invaluable tool, I think, in the coming months and years. So thanks for that, Ralph.
And thank you. Thank Counterpunch. Hang in there.
Sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough. Just give